One of the things we enjoy most here on Current State is when we have an opportunity to go beyond just reporting the news and into the realm of storytelling. In a time historians call the Golden Age of Radio, few people captivated their audiences like Orson Welles. His 1938 production of the H.G. Wells novel, The War of the Worlds, thrust millions of people into panic as he spun a tale of a Martian invasion. Well, mid-Michigan native Brad Schwartz grew up listening to old recordings like War of the Worlds. 2 years ago, he co-wrote a PBS documentary on the 75th anniversary of the broadcast. Now, Current State's Kevin Labrie joins me with an update. What's Brad Schwartz been doing since then, Kevin?
Well, writing his first book, Mark. It's called Broadcast Hysteria, Orson Welles' War of the Worlds and the Art of Fake News. There's an intriguing title. Schwartz dives deep into the news-gathering world of the 1930s to explore how even, quote, authentic journalism wasn't really what it seemed. In studying the War of the Worlds, Schwartz pored over hundreds of letters written to Orson Welles after the broadcast, and in doing so, he began to peer into the collective psyche of the nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is the latest bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News, Toronto, Canada. Professor Morris of Macmillan University reports observing a total of 3 explosions on the planet Mars between the hours of 7:45 p.m. and 9:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
I noticed this trend that in most cases it wasn't listening to the broadcast itself that really frightened people, but instead it was hearing about it from somebody else, whether a friend or a relative calling or rushing next door to tell them you got to turn on CBS, something is happening. The most extreme examples or instances of hysteria where you had large numbers of people running around, behaving hysterically, were on places like college campuses, where you had a lot of people in a contained environment, and all it takes is one person mishearing the broadcast and running to tell 5 people who tell 5 people who tell 5 people. So they didn't, back in those days, they didn't have Twitter and Facebook and the social media we have today, but with the technology they did have, the phone, and with word of mouth, it spread in the same way that something going viral does today.
Clustered populations then bred and fueled the hysteria.
Right, yeah. I mean, I would imagine many of the people who were most frightened never even heard the broadcast itself. And most people who thought something horrible was happening didn't really know that it was Martians. They thought it was Germans or a natural disaster. So it got twisted, and it's like a game of telephone. Everybody puts their own spin on it. It was the same sort of thing.
You'd grown up listening to these classic 1930s radio broadcasts. You did a class project on the War of the Worlds in high school. It became your thesis at University of Michigan. That led to a film writing credit on the PBS American Experience documentary on the 75th anniversary back in 2013. Now you have turned all this into a book. So how did all these experiences, your entire life, Brad?
Professional life.
Well, even as a child,
true.
Too,
That's
listening
true.
To this.
That's
sure.
true.
How did all this push you to think deeper about the real meaning or the hidden meaning, perhaps, or the message behind the broadcast of the War of the Worlds?
The way the sequence of events played out, it built. You know, each time it was a slightly greater challenge, a slightly higher stakes, and it forced me to sort of, every time I approached it, come at the material a different way. When I learned that the University of Michigan had this massive archive of Orson Welles' papers, that they had all these letters from people who had heard the broadcast and wrote about their experiences, and when I read them and discovered all these other dimensions that I hadn't anticipated, that convinced me that the event had greater relevance today, really, than at any time in our history. We were talking about viral media, the same dynamics were at play then that are at play now, and obviously, fake news and misinformation and the spread of falsity through the media is a greater concern now than at any time in the past. And the more I kind of lived with this, the more that I lived in 1938, the more I came to realize that, you know, this is a wonderful cautionary tale, not just to not believe the alarming tweet or rumor that you hear, but also to take what comes to you through the mainstream news media a bit skeptically as well.
Let's go back to 1938. Let's listen to a key clip from The War of the Worlds. The Martians have landed in Grover's Mill, New Jersey. A reporter named Carl Phillips has apparently been vaporized by a plume of fire. You hear a scream, we can infer the worst. Then the United States Secretary of the Interior comes on the air. He's not identified by name, but back in 1938, that was Harold LeClaire Ickes, and he's telling the nation to stay calm. Here it is.
Citizens of the nation, I shall not try to conceal the gravity of the situation that confronts the country, nor the concern of your government in protecting the lives and property of its people. However, I wish to impress upon you, private citizens and public officials, all of you, the urgent need of calm and resourceful action.
So this is a pivotal moment in the broadcast. A public official is now on the radio. What is happening in real life, in real time across America when that part of the broadcast happens?
Well, we're not entirely sure how many people heard the broadcast. The best estimate that we have is somewhere around 5 to 6 million people. And it must be said that the vast majority of those, probably, you know, 5 out of 6 knew that they were listening to a dramatic show and took it as such, although they frequently got caught up in it because it is such a perfectly produced show. But for the 1 million or so who tuned in late or missed the opening announcements or for whatever reason believed they were listening to a real news report, this was really the major turning point for believing in the broadcast.
We're talking with Brad Schwartz. He's a mid-Michigan native and the author of Broadcast Hysteria, Orson Welles, War of the Worlds, and the Art of Fake News. The War of the Worlds was not the first time that the listening public had been hustled. Orson Welles later said that the broadcast was just meant to be entertainment. It was a Halloween prank. But he had come from an era when radio was still new, was still experimental, and the radio networks intentionally blurred the lines of reality.
Yes, at that time, the major broadcast networks banned the use of recordings in news broadcasts, but also generally. Everything, by and large, that went over the air happened live. Sort of the stated reason for this was that airing recordings was dishonest in some sense, that listeners expected that what they were hearing was actually happening, so you couldn't play a recording of something that had already happened. That would be a hoax on them. That was how they argued it. And this presents problems, obviously, for news broadcasting, because news doesn't always happen when you're able to record it. So the way some shows got around this was restaging news events in a studio. The most famous show that did this, and probably the most popular news program of the 1930s, was a series called The March of Time.
Show window of Adolf Hitler's Nazi Germany today is its capital city, Berlin. Here the casual visitor may be surprised by the air of prosperity, the well-dressed crowd, and by the abundance of rich food served in its cafes and terraces. Nowhere does the visitor see privation or hunger.
They had actors impersonate people like FDR, Adolf Hitler, all kinds of major newsmakers of the day. And although they always made clear that these were dramatizations, that they were not recordings or live broadcasts from the White House, it seems in many instances that listeners believed that what they were hearing was the authentic voices of the people on the show. But because of this feeling among broadcasters that recordings were somehow inauthentic, it was somehow then more authentic to restage a news event than to air a recording of the actual thing. And one of the major voices, one of the major impersonators on that show was Orson Welles. He was on it for several years. That's where he got his big break into broadcasting. And he took a lot of what he learned on The March of Time, a lot of the techniques that they used, and directly applied them to War of the Worlds.
Now, a major exception to this rule, and one of the most famous broadcasts in history, was a year and a half before the War of the Worlds, May 6th, 1937. The Hindenburg, the biggest Zeppelin of its day, arrives in Lakehurst, New Jersey, and WLS Radio in Chicago sends Herb Morrison to cover the event. But even then, it was not true to life, live on the scene as it's happening as it is today. How was that presented back then?
Well, Herbert Morrison was recording the event on a disc recorder, and it was going to air on a smaller local station, which is why the ban on recordings didn't really apply. But he was just there to cover the landing, I think, for American Airlines, because they had connecting flights to the Hindenburg. And so he's talking into the recorder as the ship explodes. And you can hear in the recording the the needle jump off the disc because of the shockwave of the explosion. And so he starts, he goes into live correspondent mode, describing what he sees and reporting on it essentially like he's doing a live broadcast.
It bursts into flames. Get this started. It's flashing terrible. Oh, my, get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the morning fast, and all the folks believe that this is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's...
So while he's, after he's covered the whole event, and they're rushing the disc back to Chicago, the first bulletins about the Hindenburg explosion go out over the news wires. And the March of Time, which aired maybe 2 hours after the explosion, gets the word. And so in that brief span of time, they put together a whole report about the history of the Hindenburg culminating in the explosion, which they recreated in the studio with sound effects and all the Foley techniques that they used at that time. And that went on the air at maybe 9:30 p.m. The Hindenburg exploded around 7. And for many listeners, that would have been the first time they, quote-unquote, heard the Hindenburg explosion. But, of course, it was faked. And at the same time, when the radio networks realized what they had with Herbert Morrison's recording, they decided it was unique enough to break their ban on recording. So the next morning, they air it, and they very clearly stated this is a recording, this is not a real live event, although there are some indications that some people did mistake it for a live event because they'd been trained to believe that everything they heard over the radio was live. So you have, you know, the faked version on the March of Time, which is somehow more authentic because it's performed live, and you have the real version on the recording, which is somehow inauthentic because it aired later. So that's the paradox of broadcasting news in the 1930s.
We're talking with Brad Schwartz. He's a mid-Michigan native and the author of Broadcast Hysteria, Orson Welles' War of the Worlds, and the Art of Fake News.
2X2L calling CQ New York. Is there anyone on the air?
Are there Orson Welles copycats today? Is there a school of thought that continues into the 21st century?
Absolutely. The broadcast has inspired countless works of film and all kinds. I mean, the Blair Witch Project, for example, was directly inspired by War of the Worlds. It was an attempt to try and replicate the effect that had in a film. And so the way that they claimed that it was real found footage, the marketing campaign at that time, which you couldn't, I don't think, pull off today.
And I understand that film actually at the time held a world record for the highest ratio of production cost to box office profit.
I think it still holds that record. It was, and a major secret to its success was convincing people successfully that it was real when it wasn't. But, you know, today with YouTube and Twitter, just about anybody can pull off an Orson Welles type stunt. Because the barrier for entry is so much lower, we need to be much more vigilant, I think, and skeptical than we currently are.
Brad Schwartz, mid-Michigan native and the author of Broadcast Hysteria, Orson Welles' War of the Worlds and the Art of Fake News. He will sign copies of his book tomorrow night at Schuller Books in Okemos. Brad, this has been a cerebral journey. Fascinating. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Thank you for having me back.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.